Welcome to the Indian Silicon Valley podcast. I'm your host, Raj, and on this podcast, I speak with founders, investors, and domain experts from the Indian Valley, trying to understand the art of building a legendary company. In this episode, I speak with Vishal Virani, co-founder and CEO of Dhivise. Dhivise is building the smartest programming platform in the world. It was started by Vishal and team from Surat in 2021, after multiple years of building a consulting business. While still early in the journey, Dhivise is already disrupting the global dev landscape and won the Developer Tool of the Year by Product Hunt in 2021. They recently closed a Series A round of $7 million led by Accel and Together Fund, and are supported by some of the most prolific builders in the ecosystem, alongside garnering incredible love from the global developer community. In my conversation with Vishal, we touch upon a bunch of interesting topics. We cover what Dhivise is aiming to achieve and how they are navigating the challenges that come along with building from a Tier 2 city for the world. We also unfold the culture at Dhivise, the product sprints and the legendary launch weeks, the obsession with developer experience, and the purpose-driven mindset. All in all, this episode is the perfect manifestation of the true building mindset. I absolutely loved covering Vishal's journey of building from a Tier 2 city, and I'm sure you will too. But before we get started, here is a quick word about our sponsor. This episode of the Indian Silicon Valley podcast is presented by Stride Ventures, which is one of India's leading venture debt funds, becoming synonymous with innovative startup financing in India. Stride Ventures provides comprehensive solutions going beyond venture debt to cater to distinctive challenges faced by high growth and inherently strong businesses backed by leading institutions. The fund has a portfolio of over 60 plus diversified companies, having deployed more than 1,500 crore rupees to date. In just over 2 years, Stride Ventures has emerged as the preferred venture debt lender in the Indian ecosystem. To know more about this phenomenal fund, visit strideventures.in, that is spelled as STRIDEVENTURES.IN. And with that, let's dive in to the 117th episode of the Indian Silicon Valley podcast with Vishal of Dhivise. Thank you so much, Vishal, for joining me. Incredibly delighted to be hosting you.
It's my pleasure.
Awesome. Great to hear that. And I can't begin to tell you how fascinated I was when I first heard about your company. I read about it and then Avinash brought this up again. And I was so interested to know that you're building Dhivise from Surat for the world. You've built an entire developer community there. And I want to uncover much of all of that and how you've gone about doing it. But before we get started, if you can give us context to your own journey and how you took the founder path, I think that'll be very interesting, Vishal. And I think it'll be a great starting point.
Sure. So it was a little different than what every founders do. So I'm coming from a background where no one is kind of in businessman or founder. So my entire family is like a farming background. So I'm the first one who did the engineering in my entire family. And at that time, during the last semester of college, I decided I don't want to go for the job, but I want to do something, and I don't want to put myself in a comfort zone. And so the easiest path is for me is to start with the consulting company, because coming from a government college in Gujarat, it's not that great background. But to learn something, I started with the consulting company where we are doing lots of technology consulting. So started with the two people in 2013, directly after the second day of my graduation. We scaled that company from two people to 150 developers in 7.5 years. And we realized lots of pain of developers and all. And then we pivoted to Dhivise. And this is my first product company. So ultimately, my journey is from farming background to the first engineer of family. And then just because I want to avoid the comfort zone of my own self, I started a consulting company. So that's how it's pretty simple. Frankly, I don't have any vision when I started the first company. I just want to do something which don't put me in the comfort zone, and that's why I started. But when we started Dhivise, we were very clear in terms of envision and all.
Got it. No, very fascinating. I think very modest there, but it's so nice to know that, you know, not having that awareness or background, you still pushed yourself and, you know, boundaries, and you didn't want to settle or be comfortable. That's a great cue for any founder listening. But coming to Devise, right, I think if you can maybe tell us what, you know, the sparkling moment for you was, what is the core insight behind what you're trying to do? And maybe also for those who are not aware, give us a brief introduction about what Devise is trying to do. I think that would be very helpful.
Sure. So Devise is a programming automation platform where we are trying to automate all the mundane and the repetitive work of developers' life. And the ultimate goal is to give them a kind of a productivity tool, which is real one. So like we want to become a kind of a lovable tool for the developers, which is not about the management, but it's about automating their task, which they don't want to do. So they can focus on the work that really matters to them. So like in writing the algorithms, writing the performance logic and all, instead of writing all that boilerplate code. That's about Devise. How we come up with this idea is like our own pain of 7.5 to 8 years. So when we're running a consulting company, we observe this particular pattern, like with each and every new project, we need to hire more and more resources. And ultimately, when we talk to our people, like almost like everyone is in that pain, like, I don't want to do this, but it's necessary. Like without fundamental UI, without writing the UI code, we cannot do anything. And that's in pain of every developers when we observe this thing. In October 2020, we started doing R&D. So there were a problem. Like, and still, it's a very big problem for everyone. Like, developer is not available in market. According to data, like, worlds need 100 million developers. And we just have 30 million. So problem were there. Like, there are lots of no-code and low-code platform. But we tried every tool that's available in market. And in my own research, like, I personally have a research of more than 200 small and big no-code, low-code platforms, but none of them solving the real problem of developers. Ultimately, they are solving the problem of citizen developers. If you are a product manager, you are a growth manager, or you are in business who knows little bit of SQL and all, it's really good for them. But developer are using those platforms? Definitely answer is no. So now the question is like, can we do this? Like the feasibility check. And in October 2020, we decided to do some kind of research around it. So we started our R&D. For a 6 month, we spent a good amount of time with so out of 150 developers, we put some of the developers for this R&D task, and we got the path. Like, we get that confidence, like we can do this. Now the question is like, can we take a very big risk of our life where we can wind up our existing growing business and we can just focus on Devise? Because we know like this kind of a tool need a very, very high focus. We cannot run two things parallelly to change the way people do a programming. Like, that's kind of a vision that we have. So we run our SWOT analysis. Like, I sit with my core team, we discuss for 6-7 days. Like, we do all possibilities, a good case scenario, worst case scenario. And at that time, we thought that like, okay, let's go for this, because if it's work out, it will be really great. If it will not work out, we'll do again service business. So we got our SWOT really good. And in April 2021, we started Devise, like where we wind up our entire business. And we even not sold it out, just because we don't want to go on that wasting period, because we want to have a very clear focus on one thing, that is Devise, and we want to automate the programming. So in our first 6 months, we launched our first version. And at this moment, we have more than 30,000 plus beta users, still product in beta. But now almost all the R&D that we were doing is like, we're quite confident we are going to crack this particular problem in the way developers love it. So we are quite obsessed with the developer experience. We don't want to change their behavior. We don't want to hamper the developer experience, and still we want to give them a power of an automation. So like, this is kind of a fundamental philosophy when we started Devise.
Awesome. I think this is so wonderful to know. I think it personifies the start of any company, right? You identified a problem statement, you followed it for a particular journey, and then you took the leap of faith. From what I can understand, you're focusing on automating the mundane things that a developer has to repeatedly do. And with that problem statement and focus on developer experience, I think it's interesting to, if we can take a step back and just, you can walk us through your, you know, the other challenges that maybe developers face, right? What are your core learnings from that first journey of 7.5 years? I think that'll be very helpful to understand. And then maybe we can go into the product roadmap and the vision that you currently have, because, you know, you've released a couple of features, you've written about a couple of things and a couple of versions that Devise has launched. So would love to know all of that. But taking a step back, what does the developer cycle look like, life cycle? I think that'll be helpful to know, Vishal.
Sure. So in general, like the UI UX guys, like the designers who design Figma designs based on the requirements, based on the client's need. And once we approve the design, it comes to a front-end developers. And the biggest problem is the handoff between designers and developers, because it's kind of a human, very human-savvy kind of a work where developers understand the things, designer explain them entire designs, animations, and all. And in most of the pattern, what we observe, and like entire world is facing this, like whenever we talk to developers or designers, you will find this common problem. Designer designs something, and now developers needs to keep that screen in front of them, and they write the code. So ultimately, there is always a variation of 10, 20% in some of the cases, like it's more than 30%, like small, small mistakes, micro mistakes, like, okay, this button color code and like whatnot. So that's the first problem where every time, because of that particular thing, you need to go into lots of iterations. Second part, as I mentioned, like now you see the UI, now you know this is a button, this is a drawer, and every time you need to write the code for it, even if you have in your repositories, you need to copy paste it, you need to do it very properly, otherwise your UI will be very, very bad. So that's the biggest problem. Second step with this data binding is there. Like every time you will get the REST APIs or the GraphQL or whatever, and you will bind it with your UI and all, and then the front end logic. So these are kind of a repetitive nature of developers programming lifecycle. And every time you need to train your resources to write the same quality of code. Understand, like if you have 150 people, everyone having the different mindset to write the code. So the developers works like this. They write the code, then you need a senior people to inspect that code. Then they will put a comment, they will recheck it. So in the world of an automation, when programmers automate entire world, their tasks are most manual one. And you need every time. So you need a senior people to train a junior one. Then you need a more senior people to check their code quality. So it's very, very boring. And I said, like, it does not have any kind of an productive in nature. And those are the problems that we identify in my 7.5 to 8 year journey. And that was the biggest motivation for me. If we automate the programming and understand, like, once we generate the code by the machine, ultimately, like, you just need to verify it once. You think, like, this is in proper quality, then for your 500 sprints or 1,000 sprints is going to give you the same quality of code. So you can save a big time on the code inspection. You can save a big time on the designer-developer handoff, because now one AI tool is reading your design and it's going to give you the pixel-perfect design. So that's how we eliminate that designer-developer handoff problems, then the data binding problem by just giving them a meaningful UI where we can generate the entire state management code. And definitely, as I said, like if you are satisfied with the code quality, then you can eliminate that all code inspection process from your programming lifecycle. So like that's the problem, and that's how we solved it.
Phenomenal. I think this is a very insight-driven approach. I think these are all insights that you've gathered over time by first principles. And I think these are very, very helpful, especially for a non-developer. I think very light bulb moment for me. And I'm sure a lot of listeners are going to enjoy this. But yeah, I think going forward, right? I mean, one of the most important and, to be very honest, very surprising things was that, you know, you're building this not from a Bangalore, not from a Chennai, not from a California. You're building this from Surat. And I think that is commendable for more reasons than one. I want to understand your thought process. How have you, taken this, and what has your thought process been? I'm sure there have been opportunities to move out as well, but you've chosen to stay back. You built your past company also from there. Why don't you just help us understand what this means for you, what this means for the team, and how you're building a global company from Surat? Would love to know that, Vishal.
So in my thought process, like every city having their own potentials, every city having the talent, but what they missed is the platform in general. So let's say if we took like before 20, 25 years time, like Bangalore does not have any global companies. They started and then they become the IT hub. Same way, like my city is known for the diamonds and textiles. And like before 50, 60 years, there were nothing, but they become. So someone needs to start. And I'm personally very, very big fan of Girish. The way he started in Chennai, and like it's just before in 10, 15 years, and like no one were there, and they started the SaaS in Chennai. And now look at, like, everyone is looking Chennai, even in your points, like you mentioned the Chennai. So that's how people started. And like my city having the 20,000 plus developers, like I just need to give them a platform. I just need to identify the good resources and we can do it. So it's a matter of chance. You need to take a chance. You need to take a stand. Definitely you will face a lots of problems. People will judge you based on the city where you are. So there are lots of stuff, but if you take a challenge and if you prove in terms of your product, it work out. So when we started in Surat, our ultimate goal is to build the product, not the vanity metrics, not the big marketing stuff. If our product gets right, people will start believing in Surat. So every city having a talent, you just need to provide them a platform. And that's we tried in form of a device, like, okay, now we have this thing. And one thing that motivates me is like, so in our city, everyone wants to move to a metro city because, like, for an example, some of them wants to go to TCA, some of them wants to go to good product companies and all. So when we started device in early days, like definitely I also have a thought, like, do we need to move to Bangalore or somewhere else? But one day we have one team member who just joined, like, as an intern, and when we give them a offer letter, her parents force her to, like, okay, join TCS, because she had like two offer letters, TCS and device. And she bring her parents to her office and said, like, I'm working in better than TCS, I'm working in a company which is better than the TCS, just see the vibes, just see the infra, just see the way we work. And her parents said, yes, you don't need to join TCS, stay here. And that gave me that fascinating moment, like, okay, now I want to build from Surat only, like, I don't want to move. And it was like very early days of device, and then everything works really well, and now I know, like, I can scale it from here. Maybe we can be a next Chennai. I don't know. Like, I'm just putting my hard efforts to give a platform to a community which is like having a really good developers but does not have a platform.
Brilliant. No, I think that's so important, right? I think a lot of fundamental learnings there, and it's very bold and hopefully very, very thriving for the entire ecosystem that, you know, the more local communities we have across the country, the more better it is. But coming to, you know, the Dhivai's journey of fundraising, I'm guessing that when you're building something, this category creating that nobody has done, and that seems very audacious, bold, you know, because if I had to summarize your vision, it's mostly to, you know, automate the workflows for developers, and you can speak better on it. But how is the fundraising journey, especially because it's a very category creating product? You can't point and be like, okay, we're building this for this or something like that, right? You've raised two rounds of funding. If you can maybe share your thoughts there, that'll be helpful.
Initially, it was really tough. So as I said, like, the only thing, so as a first time founder, I always introduce myself as, like, I'm X of my X. I don't have any pedigrees. I don't have any label like an ex-Google, ex-Facebook or ex-Flipkart. So because directly after the graduation, I started Coruscate. So I'm always say I'm X of my X without any degrees. So definitely, like, if we see the VC checklist, like, I do not fulfill any of the checklist being into Surat, being a first-time product founder. So only strength that I observe that we have is a product, because in a 6 month, we have a product live. So we try to leverage that particular fact, like, okay, this is a product, this is very different and all. But definitely convincing someone who needs to put a lots of money on just the product trust is quite difficult. So definitely it took me to 40 plus VCs where I face a lots of question, how you will scale it from Surat. Like, this isn't quite tough space. How you will get the engineers from Surat who can build a dev tool, because Surat is not known for this kind of a dev tool creation. So lots of things, even like, I don't know the language of raising the fund. Like, even like when we give the first pitch, then I realized, like, okay, giving a sales pitch and investment pitch is a very different stuff. So we focused on learning. Like, I personally focus on learning the new things. I talk to lots of people, and definitely it's not about Bangalore and Surat. It's just in kind of in borders. But I got lots of support from the Bangalore founders and lots of other people who I don't know, even like Avinash Raghavan, who is doing a really good job in terms of in SaaS Bhumi. So I just dropped him a message on a LinkedIn, and he spent like 1 hour of time. And the same question, like, I'm facing lots of issues being into Surat. Do I need to move? And he said, like, reserve a build from the Jaipur. You will have a time when you need to move. So don't worry about it. Just focus on a learning and all. And it will start, it will turn to a good things. So again, like, as I said, like, we face the initial challenges a lot. But at the end, India Caution put a trust. And before that, So when you are in this local ecosystem, so the first trust we got from the Dholakia Ventures, it's a very recent fund from my city, but they put a trust, then India Quotient comes and we raise our first seed round. And at that time, we have a really good traction. We already become a product and developer tool of the year. That is the first time in India someone got that golden kitty. And then within 3-4 months, we raise our series A round from the Excel and Together funds. So that's how initially we faced lots of challenges. It was quite depressing for me. And personally, at one point of time, I was in that thought, if you are not from the fancy colleges, or if you don't have any background, or if you're not in Bangalore, you don't need to start the startup. Just focus on your technology consulting business because no one is going to fund you. And then also the good part is, like, I always share my feelings. So I dropped a message to one VC firm. Like, you don't want to fund this kind of a startup. You try to do something from the different city. You always have your checklist and you don't want to move beyond it. And he called me. He said, like, it's not like that. And then I have my self-introspection. Like, it's a big money you're asking from someone. And definitely you need to prove yourself. Even if you ask 1 crore from your father for your startup, maybe they are not going to put that money in you. So why someone would put money just by sending a 2-3 emails and on 5 calls? You need to prove your strength. You need to prove a lots of stuff so someone can give you a big money. And that introspection gave me a really good insight to my own selves. Then I, again, as I said, improve. And then finally, we cracked this overall $10 million funds within 3-4 months. And then I realized it's not about the city. It's not about the founder's background, but it's about the maturity, the way you talk, the way you present, the way you focus on your real insights instead of a vanity metrics. That makes you a perfect founder.
Absolutely. I think those are amazing pointers for founders looking to raise and maybe struggling along the pathway. We also hear of, you know, the downturn in everything, funding winter. But I think your story is a testament that no matter where you come from, if you focus on the maturity and, as you mentioned, the product, right? If you prove yourself, enough believers will be found. Lovely. I think this is all very, very heartening to hear. When we come to the developer community, right? You've been a huge proponent of how to build a community and obsess over developer experience. Talk to us about more as to, you know, how you make that happen, Vishal, and what is the thought process behind it, right? Like, from the outside, it looks like a couple of fancy terms, but what does this mean in actuality? What are the little things that you do and how do you keep this community engaged? Would love to know that.
Sure. So the first thing, I'm a computer engineer by background. And as I said, like, we had 150 people team in past ventures. So I just observed the common pattern of how a developer consume in any software. Like, I never get a call from VS Code, IntelliJ, or anyone else in my 7.5 year of service company. Will you buy this software? Never. Like, developer having their own kind of a journey. They use the platform, and if you talk to them, like, how you find this software? Ultimately, all the answers comes to a community. So when we discuss all these parameters, how you consume any software, how you evaluate any software, how you get to know about that, everything turned to that community aspect. And that's where we decided, like, it's going to be community lead growth. And Postman is like the biggest example how community can help you. And even like when we started Coruscate, at the same time, like, Postman also started, and the way they build the community, the way they solve the real problem, that makes a lot of sense. And that's the motivation to go by the community driven approach. Like, in the early days, we realized, like, okay, it's not going to be a sales-driven approach. It's not going to be a marketing-driven things. It's the entire growth need to be a community-driven. And that's where we decided, like, okay, instead of spending time anywhere else, let's focus on the community. We started with, instead of building a device community, we took a little different approach because, like, we were new in the market. And I personally haven't built any community before. So we tried to leverage the existing communities. So let's say we started with the Figma having a very big community. So we launched our Figma plugin. And from there, we got like 6,000 plus users. So Figma already having the existing community. And now every community need a second kind of support. So let's say we are in the API first world, but to consume the APIs, you need a front end. And where device is solving a big problem for them. Like, okay, use the Postman, use any APIs. Like, for an example, recently we did the integration with ChargeBee or a Freshwork APIs. Like, we have lots of integrations. So now if you want to consume a Notion APIs, Airtable APIs, or any other APIs, you need a front end. So device is filling that particular gap by leveraging the existing community of Notion, existing community of Webflow. So when the community is already exists there, they can use device platform, and then that's how they can become a part of a device community. So instead of doing a different thing, we just try to leverage the existing community that is already there. So that's my approach about building the community. And once you are satisfying the need, so like I learned this thing from Avinash, it's very simple. When we say it's community, it's about people. It doesn't matter. It's a developer community, it's a creator community or anything. It's about the people and people having some need. And if you satisfy that need without hampering their experience, without hampering their emotions, then by default, you can build a good community. It doesn't matter if it's a developer or it's anyone else. So we're just trying to keep that thing in mind. Like, okay, without hampering their emotions, can we deliver that kind of an experience that's help us to build the perfect community? And we are just trying hard to get it done.
Awesome. I think very, very, very brilliant pointers again, because I think very fundamentally clear as to how you're thinking about some of these things, which don't have to be complicated, right? They have to be straightforward. But if you, as he said, right, any community is full of people. And if you attend those people in the best possible way, I think it gets figured out. So wonderful to know that. But the second part of, you know, what Device has done amazingly well is, you know, the launch weeks and this culture of hackathons, right? That week-long hackathon that you can maybe talk about more. But these are some very special components and seem like, you know, ideas which build the culture at Device also. So if you can maybe talk to us about how this, you know, ship fast culture or just execution first culture exists and how you've been able to build that within. What is it? How does it happen? And why? I think that will be a very, very helpful mechanism.
If I'm being candid, it started with a very different thing. So initially we decided like every 15 days we want to ship features when we started Device. So after 3 months, we started shipping features every 15 days. And then just because of unexpected things, we missed like 2 to 3 deliveries. And then I sat with team and I said like, okay, now we are. So it was a very funny moment. I was sitting with the leadership. And now you are going to get the punishment because we broke our commitment with our developers, with our users. Like every 15 days, we are going to ship something new. So now let's ship everything together in a 1 week. And every day you need to ship something new on server, on our production server. And it turned to a product week, the launch week. And like everyone is quite excited. Like this is a really cool idea. Like for 7 days or for 5 consecutive days, if we release something, it will get lots of traction. We will be in public eyes. And the thing started with like, okay, now just because to just give a push to ourselves, we announce it early. In 15 days, we are coming up with the launch week. We are going to release this thing. So team need to be very, very serious. And that entire thing turned to be like this Flipkart Big Billion Day, where everyone spent a really good time in office with very different energy, because now we committed in public. Otherwise, like it was just commitment to yourselves, like we release every 15 days. But now in these 7 days, you are going to release these big features on production server. So that's how the launch week one started. But we got a really good success. And during that launch week one, we see the energy, like we enjoyed the entire day, like we were rolling the drums. At the end, we cook something in office. We are celebrating the entire moment of releasing the features. Like it was very different. Otherwise, you just celebrate the success. Like, okay, we got 10,000 users. But this is the time when we celebrate the release of features. Doesn't matter if it's going to be success or not, but we just enjoying our efforts of developing something. And then we did launch work 1, 2. And at the time of launch week 3, we decided like, let's take a moonshot. So we decided to complete the work of one entire quarter in just 1 month. Like team were quite motivated. They pushed me like, okay, we want to release that many features within the 7 days. Let's buckle up. This time we will do we will create lots of video content, lots of content around our launch week and all. So launch week 3 is like the most successful launch that we ever did. Like our growth is just jumped from like 2x from our past months, and it's still stable. Like we are having that kind of a stable growth after launch week. We connect that launch week with the product and launch. So it's this launch week 3 is in preparation of like 1.5 months. We decide, we plan out everything for in a 15 days. We put it in a perfect way. It's like this was the craziest launch week that we did recently, which is the launch week 3. But the idea started with like we missed few releases, and we personally felt like it's the commitment breakout from what we want to deliver to our users. And then it turned to our launch week. And now every quarter we are doing this launch week.
Lovely, lovely. I think one costly mistake turned out to be such a huge benefit for the company and became a culture thing. It's just amazing when I first heard about it and then you sent me those posts and it was just very, very heartening to see. But as a result, you've of course, you know, launched now I think a couple of times on Product Hunt and very successfully, right? This is very tactical in nature. But if you were to, you know, share any thoughts around how to just crack a Product Hunt launch, right? If you had to just sum it up for us, for any young builder who's listening on Product Hunt or founders or teams, what would you have to tell them?
Sure. So we did two launches on Product Hunt in 2021 and recently, like just before 2 weeks. So the first launch launch is not that great, but still, because of the developer tool category, we got nominated for the Product Hunt developer tool for the year. So when we got nominated, like at that time, we know the power of community and community helped us a lot to get that Product Hunt developer tool of the year. And at that time, we realized like, okay, and that gives us a lots of visibility. Like that's a first sign we can build something from Surat. That was a turning point. Like frankly, in January, when we got that award, we got lots of inbound interest from everyone, from the people who wants to join us, from the VC world, from everyone. And at that time, we realized like you need one kind of an external entity who can say this is a great tool. And that's how Product Hunt turns to a really good thing for us. And recently, we did this Product Hunt Device 2.0 launch on Product Hunt in August last week, 29th. So the one thing that is common if you want to launch on Product Hunt, so it's kind of in pattern, as I said, like don't think about the developers, don't think about the community. It's about the human being and it's about the people. So whenever someone comes to me like to discuss anything like, okay, about device, about their own problem, about space, about anything, I always try to help them like whatever time I have. Like, so I have my dedicated calendar for the Saturday where I try to help people. And ultimately, when we are trying to launch on a Product Hunt, everyone give us a shout out. Like it was a purely organic. It was quite overwhelming, like in most of the like really good founders, VCs, everyone is giving us a shout out on LinkedIn and the Twitter. And like we were never imagined such kind of a thing. But the one thing that I observe in common is like, because we were a good relation. It's about the community. When they need a help, you offer them. When they want to talk something, you give your time. So when now you are doing something, they will give their time. Otherwise, like if you feel like I will send a thousands message to everyone and people will turn out to give you the shout out, it's not going to happen. The core part is don't be in that ego like, okay, I will do my work when I won't, but when I will go in market, people will support me. You need to be that kind of a person if you are a founder or if you are just believing in the community-driven approach. So that was a stuff. So in Product Hunt, we prepare a lot. So the first thing, you need to find a good hunter. So there is a concept of a hunter who hunt your product. So the last time who hunt us and who gave us that Product Hunt developer tool of the year. So we talked to him. Like again, we decide the date. Like we want to launch on Monday only. We want to launch on this particular date. Like we want to connect our launch week with our Product Hunt launch. And also it was a like well-planned strategy for us. Second thing, the way you put your content in front of the entire community. So sometimes what you did is like, you want to put a lots of stuff like, okay, we are doing this, that in a Product Hunt page. But understand, like people will just focus on one liner. If that one line give them a motivation, they will come on your detail page where they will just see the brief introduction. They will see the images and then they will scroll it down for the maker's comment. So at every point, you need to be very careful how people will understand your product. You need to put it in very easiest way. And that's how we plan it in advance. Like every images, every GIF that we create, like it's delivered the right message or not. And then the community shout out and all. And eventually, like in a day, we got like 1300 plus upvotes. I can say like it's not the concrete data, but in last one quarter, no one get the 1300 votes in just one day.
Yeah, no, I check sometimes and I can't recall of it, but this is all very amazing. What I'm fundamentally hearing is you just have to, you know, believe in the real human motivations, understand it. And when it comes to community, just stick to the simple things. And then a lot of preparation, a lot of eye on attention to detail is also what I'm hearing. So I think all of those are very, very helpful pointers.
If I add one more point, like you need to connect the dots. If you miss one dot, you are gone. So like you just focus on the community, but you didn't focus on the hunter, or if you didn't focus on the content, then also it, and the main thing, the product itself. So you need to connect all the dots, then it will work. Otherwise, definitely you will get success, but you don't know how. So now we know the playbook, like even we are going to open this playbook very soon, but we know this time we are going to get in the product hunt, developer tool of the product hunt of the day, product hunt of the week. We prepared like that. It's not by luck. Maybe I can say the product and developer tool of the year by luck, frankly, like openly, because we don't know how it turned out, but just community supporters, it works good. It went good, but this time we plan it out and it went well and it's according to plan only.
That's perfect. I think that summarizes it up. You can't rely on luck. You have to be prepared and you have to look at it comprehensively. You can't just remove any holes because then that's not a strategy. That's a prayer. Love it. Love it. Awesome. The next part that I wanted to focus on is the team part of it, right? I think it looks like that this is a group of great people doing something very, very different and from a city which may not have, the resources, if I may call it that, right? I'm stereotyping because I want to understand from you how you all look at it, right? How do you build a thriving culture? Does it feel, is there any FOMO? Or what are your ways to attract great talent in the city and ensure that they are having a great time overall, right? Because it feels like you've been able to crack that code of, what people want and you've been able to figure that out, be it customers, be it product builders, be it developers, and would love to know how you look at the team in turn.
So definitely the entire device is just successful because of the team. They put a really great efforts and instead of being into that kind of a mindset, like we cannot do anything. So we never say never. So that kind of a mindset my entire team has. And just because of them, we reach at that particular stage. But if I summarize my entire thing, like all your questions into one word, it's in belongingness. We have a culture of belongingness. Like we work very differently. Like our Slack channel means life. Like we have a such kind of a stuff where we work very closely with each other. We cannot say it's a family, but I always say I call it a belongingness because it works for your community, it works for your own developers, it works for your team, everything. So that's the one thing that we are really, really care about. And it's I personally believe, we conduct multiple events, like for an example, offsites and fun events and all to build the culture. But ultimately, the cultures, if you want to build a culture of belongingness, you just need to talk to your people. Just discuss their problem, what kind of things that they have in their mind. Doesn't matter, it's in personal, professional. If they are open to share, they need one shoulder to cry. And if you are that shoulder, they will never leave you. And that's how you can build a really strong culture. Definitely, at the scale, you cannot maintain it. But for the startup, first 3-4 years are very crucial. And until that time, you will just require 200, 250 people. And for that, in my personal opinion, because I run that company for 7 years with 150 people, up to 150 to 200 people, you can create the strong belongingness. And then definitely at some certain stage, you can ask your people to carry on. So you need to talk to your people. You need to deliver that mindset. You need to have a really good care for them. And ultimately, you can attract the good talent. Your talent will be advocate of yourself. Like we don't have any talent recruiter or anyone. Still, we have 60 people. We have a really good retention, like more than 90% of retention that we have in this time of great resignation. And my people know they can easily get a good salary if they move out of device. But still, they want to stay with us. And as I said, all credit goes to them because they believe in the vision. By the developers, for the developer, of the developers. And just because of the culture of belongingness, because they know the CEO is available whenever they are in problem. So that's what we are trying to build from Surat. And that's how we attract the talent. Rest everything is supporting stuff. So we have a really good office. We really have a flexible structure, hybrid culture. You can come anytime and those are the stuff. But the product itself, where developers wants to solve a problem of developers, and a culture of belongingness easily attract their good talent. Second part, as I said, Surat having 20,000 plus developer, and every year, last year, more than 800 people appear for the campus in a placement, and we got our 11 best resources out of that. So if someone asks me can I build such culture or can I attract such kind of talent in Bangalore? Definitely, it will take time because a huge competition. But if you just want to attract 100 or 300 good people out of 20,000 resource pool, definitely you just need to tweak a little bit of things. You just need to establish yourselves in a different way and you will become a brand. So many times we receive this compliment you are a mini Google for Surat, and everyone knows about device, everyone knows about what we are trying to build. And that's how we got a lots of inbound requests for joining the company. So we don't need to do anything new. We just stick to ourselves and that's how it's work.
That's wonderful. Very, very heartening to hear. And it's just, this is very mission driven. I love that word. Belongingness, of course, has a lot of value. And I think it summarizes it very well. This is great. I think I'm almost in awe of the fact that there's such simplicity yet clarity in all that you have said. And I just think there's such great work happening. As we conclude the episode, I would love to, you know, ask you a series of personal questions on your founder journey and understand more. This is a series of similar questions that I ask each founder on the show before we end. The first one there, Vishal, is primarily, you know, how have you grown through this journey, and how has this shift from the services to the product mindset, bootstrap to the funded mindset, and you know, how have you evolved as a individual qualitatively, right? Like, what are the changes that you have gone through from that, you know, college graduate who started the services company to now building like a very large product company? And this is only getting started, right? I'm sure that if this vision is to become true, Dhivaiz is going to be a giant of a company. So how have you evolved? Would love to know that.
So the one thing remains same in entire journey is the learning. So when I started after the graduation, and I said like the first engineer, first time business person, like I can't call myself entrepreneur because we are not solving any big problem. We were just doing the routine business of consulting. So in both the fact, the learning is the key thing. Like I need to learn a lot to be in the market, to solve the problem, to grow myself and all. So if in terms of an hustle and learning, the journey is similar. When I started Coruscate, it has the same hustle, and in Dhivaiz it has the same hustle. But in terms of tactics and qualityness, so quantity of efforts is same, but the quality of efforts is very different. Is I consider the service business and the product is North Pole and South Pole. It's very different mindset and all. But if you want to learn, if you want to change yourself, like if you're open for the changes, then it will be very easier. Definitely, I need to learn everything from scratch. Even I don't know what is ICP. I don't know what is a PMF. So from learning those kind of stuff to make it happen, it's very different thing. But as I said, like I always believe in like there are lots of people who wants to help you. So I watched few videos on Sit to Scale program, and at that time I listened Sekhar Kirani, and like he mentioned one thing: if you want to play the game, you need to understand the rules of game. And I understand this, like, okay, yes, so I have a stamina, I have a expertise of my previous company, but if you just do a jogging, and if you are building a really good stamina, that does not mean you can play a cricket well. And if you want to play a cricket, you need to understand the rules of cricket. Otherwise, it doesn't matter how good athlete you are, but you can't win the game. Even you can't play the game at all. And you will not enjoy it at all if you are not know the rules of it. So the first thing that I did in my Dhivaiz career, I just tried to understand like, okay, how people talk. What are the jargons that I need to understand? So I read a lots of blogs of YCI. I complete the course of Sit to Scale of Excel and all. And then I understand, like, okay, these are the things. Now, when we implement in practical, what kind of challenges we will face? Again, I started doing that. So ultimate thing is like, if you are open to change, if you are willing to learn, there are contents available. There are people who can help you. But you just need to enter into that hustle. Otherwise, like overall, product and service is very, very different. I clearly saying like it's a North Pole, South Pole, but somehow we get it done.
Got it. Very, very helpful. I think just learning, I think continuously learning as a founder is so, so important. And all of what you said just proves it. On the other part, right? I mean, without getting too dramatic, I'm sure there were challenges, and you mentioned, right, 40 VCs, it didn't work out initially and multiple things. Anything, you know, in general, what is the motivation that keeps you going, right, as a founder? I mean, what is that? I understand that now you have this broad vision and you have want to bring it to light, but what is that qualitative emotion that keeps you going and motivation that helps you conquer the path? I think anything there will be helpful, because this can be a lonely, tough journey, right? Starting up. So, yes.
So instead of motivation, like motivation will definitely keep us ahead, but to live in present, we need some kind of a fundamental belief. So I always believe like, let's say my entire family annual income is less than 1.5 lakhs INR when I were in college, and like I never seen such kind of a good life. So I always believe like, okay, if I can move from there to here, like I can do anything. Like, and even if I need to go to past, I have a 22 year of experience of living that particular life. So it will be easier. Like that's where you use the experience. When you say like I'm an experienced person, so I'm having a experience of 22 year of hustle, like to get the pocket money to everything. So that keep me in present. Like, okay, if everything fails, I don't need to worry. I know that life where I can easily live comfortably and I can start it from scratch. That keeps me in present. Definitely the motivation is like when you with your people, once you float your vision, people will keep you motivated. Like, okay, we need to crack this particular problem. Otherwise, we will be diverted from our vision. So the people with whom you share your vision, your users, your other people is the secondary. The first thing, the people with whom you work, they need to keep you motivated for your vision. Even if you want to divert, like they will push you. No, we want to do this stuff only. That's why we are here. So my people motivate me a lot.
Super. Relying on people and having that mission. That's what I'm taking back. This has been very, very interesting. And I think I have just learned so much about just fundamentally thinking about things in a very simple manner. As we end this, and since, you know, the journey is only getting started, I'd love to know if you can maybe summarize in the next couple of minutes what the broad vision and mission is. And if, you know, you make it true, how will that happen? I just want to get a sneak peek into all that's going to come from Device. But if you can just focus on, you know, the broad vision of how this problem gets solved and what all do you have planned to the extent that you can share, I think that would be a very fitting end to what's been a wonderful conversation, Vishal.
So ultimately, we want to build the most intelligent programming platform. So I see a future of Device as another IDE which automate your 60% of the programming and will make you free from all the legacy code. So that's what we are trying to build in a long term. So it's going to be a most intelligent programming platform of the world, if I summarize in one line.
Perfect. I think that is very, very audacious, broad. And I'm sure everyone listening in is cheering for you to achieve that. And we hope that this company does, so that you're not just the mini Google of Surat, you are the first Device of making Surat the next hub of SaaS in the country and hopefully all over. Thank you so much, Vishal, for your time. I have genuinely learned a lot and I've loved how simple you've made it sound. Thank you so much for being on the show and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did.
And it's great talking to you, and it's really my pleasure to share my learnings with everyone through your channel. It's really, really thank you for inviting me.
My pleasure, and I'm sure this is going to be very helpful to our listeners. Thank you so much again.
Thank you.
Awesome. With that, we come to the end of this conversation. Thank you so much for tuning into the episode. I really hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you're finding value with the podcast, do follow it on the audio streaming platform of your choice, drop in a review, and subscribe to our WhatsApp newsletter to get all the updates directly on your inbox. Thanks again. I will see you next week for another episode. Till then, I hope you recall. If you never try, you'll never know. Stay tuned and keep building.